This meeting is now being recorded.
Okay, thank you, Elizabeth, and thank you, everybody, for joining and devoting your time to this meeting, which is an open meeting of the Language Access Plan Implementation Task Force of the California Judiciary. We have some important ground to cover, and as always, I'm grateful to you for your commitment to the task force, and I'm grateful not only to the members and our staff, but to members of the public for your interest in the work we're doing, and welcome you to the call if you're on. I want to remind everybody that today's meeting is an open meeting, which means that everything is being recorded. Please, when you speak up, say your name so we recognize who you are. Place your phone on mute to minimize background noise when you're not speaking. And don't put us on hold because it may trigger music or pre-recorded messages, which would be most unfortunate in any language. I want to acknowledge a letter we received from staff interpreters of the Superior Courts in Northern and Central California. Staff have shared the letter with members of the task force prior to the call, so thank you for that submission. Now back to Elizabeth for our task force tradition, which is our roll call.
Thank you, Justice Clare. Members can just quickly let me know if you're on the call when I call your name. Justice Clare?
I'm right here.
Judge Covarrubias?
I'm here.
Naomi Adelson? Judge Austin?
Here.
Kevin Baker?
Here.
And I know Angie Birchfield's on the line. Hello, Angie. Justice Braniers is not able to join us. And Tracy Clark, I know, is on the line. Judge Conklin? Judge Cord? Judge Gard? I believe is not able to join us. Anna Maria Garcia? Judge Hayashi?
Here.
Janet Hudak?
Here.
Joanne Lee?
Here.
Yvette Pena?
Here.
Justice Pena?
Here.
Justice Penner. Mike Roddy. Janine Tucker. Dr. Valdez is not able to join us. Jose Varela.
Yes, present.
Judge Walsh.
Here.
David Yamasaki.
I am here.
Thank you. Justice Zelon.
I'm here.
We have a quorum, Justice Clare.
It's always good news. Thank you. So I'll get right to it because I know time is short. So let's do approval of the minutes. On Friday, May 5th, Judicial Council sent out draft minutes from our business meeting for January 30th, 2017, and our community outreach meeting on March 14th, 2017. Do I have a motion to approve the following minutes? First, the minutes of our open meeting on January 30th, 2017. If you were there, you can motion.
So moved, Yamasaki.
Thank you. Do I have a second?
Second, Dennis Hayashi.
Thank you. All those in favor say aye.
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 Okay. Any votes against? No, hearing none. Next, the minutes of the open meeting from March 14th, 2017, the community outreach meeting we did in Inland Empire. Motion.
Move approval, Yamasaki.
Okay, I heard David Yamasaki. Do I have a second?
Second, Zelon.
Terrific. Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
Okay, it's unanimous. Thank you very much. Now for the main event. So this is a meeting that is about resources. There's no simpler way to state it. We are entering another crucial period for the task force. We are doing our best to take account of all that we can do with existing resources, but it's a time where not only are there resource challenges that are no doubt looming for the state, particularly given the level of uncertainty around a whole bunch of things that the state does and healthcare and so on, but we also now have a lot more information than we did 2 years ago, two and a half years ago, when the task force was just an idea, a concept. And so what we've tried to do is to use that information, to use what we've learned, to do a lot of sessions of input with the public and to get input from committee, subcommittee chairs. And our staff have been working really diligently in the last couple of days and weeks to to take all that information and generate some more precise figures. Judge Austin and I have been discussing these items with subcommittees and the subcommittee chairs, Judge Covarrubias as well, and we've also been very much helped not only by our own language access staff, but by the staff for budget services that works for the entire Judicial Council. So the long and the short of it is that when you take all of that together and our surveys and whatnot, we know that we are moving in the right direction. But we know we need additional resources, and what I'm going to do today is to ask for your support so that we can approve moving forward with these BCP items to the next step in the process, which is the, you know, to work them through the Judicial Council's BCP process. So with that said, I'm going to give you a really quick top level broad overview of what these items are, and then Judge Austin, who chairs our budget subcommittee, is going to go into more detail. So the biggest item is our request for additional resources for expansion of interpreter services into all civil proceedings. The news here is mostly good, but it's pretty clear that even for those courts that are doing excellent efforts to broaden availability of interpreters in civil proceedings, there are a whole bunch of areas like small claims where we have not gotten to full coverage and we need additional resources. So working with budget services and taking a couple of passes at this, we've come up with the figure of roughly $4 million. That is probably the most important item, but it's not the only crucial item for us. We have been hearing time and again from a number of our task force members about the need for infrastructure support and equipment that is not of a video remote interpreting nature, VRI being separate. We're dealing with that, we're covering it, but this equipment, including crucially headsets, is something we'd also like to cover, so we are asking for about $2.7 million to support that. Third, in consultation with our subcommittee on translation and signage and tools for courts, we have identified the need for a grant program to incentivize courts across the state and give them a sense that if they do want to do the right thing and make sure that to the greatest extent possible their signs are multilingual and help people from different backgrounds, we would like to create a grant program for that purpose. And there are going to be situations where those resources can be used one way in one county, one way, a different way in a different county, and that's the whole point. We don't want a one-size-fits-all solution. We want to make sure there's some flexibility built in. Fourth, we love the Language Access Toolkit. It continues to get lots of hits. It will get more hits. And we know that that effort to put so much of the knowledge that people on this task force have and the people who work on language access across the state have online will take some maintenance and some development of new content. So we're asking for a small amount of resources, less than $100,000, $85,000 to be precise. For that purpose and for the closely related purpose of supporting the production of multilingual videos that promote access to justice that can be placed on the Language Access Toolkit and distributed otherwise. And then last but certainly not least, we're doing everything we can with current staff, but we need additional resources, so we're asking for $371,000 for that purpose. That comes up to a little bit over $8 million, $8.152 million. And two FTEs. I will say just about the FTEs that we are really working hard with the leadership of Judicial Council staff to make the best possible use of the staff we do have. We're lucky to have them, but I want to be mindful of just what the limits of their own capacity really are. And in recognition of that, I see that we need to ask for this limited number of additional FTEs. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Judge Austin, who will go into more details.
Thanks, Justice Square. We'll start with the first one, and the staff has been working on all of them very, very hard. We've had plenty of calls, lots of meetings, and internally they've had many, many, many hours of meetings with services and with the department, with the finance people, with Lucy and Zlatko's been involved and others, to try to come up with our BCPs this year in a way that we can make sure that they're justified in much more detail than they were the last time that we submitted and when we didn't end up getting much money for them last year. And so we want to make sure that they all are supported by exactly data and information and need so that we'll have a much stronger selling point when we go to Department of Finance at the end of this year.
I'm sorry to interrupt. This is John Conklin calling in. I'll go mute. Thank you.
Hi, John. In doing that, we've had to kind of dig through all of different information that we have. And we have, as to the first one, the one that would be expansion of interpreter services, we've have some new data, and we've been trying to piece together all the different types of data that we have in order to come up with more accurate estimate of what we're actually going to need to get to complete expansion in all areas of civil. And we're able to kind of put that together, some of the data that we have been collecting from the courts, the reporting data, along with the survey data, and come up with a methodology to try to put detail to the BCP request and say this is why we need as much money as we do. It involves a very hard math problem, and I don't want to go into it in detail to the way that they actually figured out how to do it, but it was a combination of the survey results along with a tracking of the court interpreter data collection system information, and came up with the $4 million that will be needed for expansion ongoing, in addition to what we had already received ongoing, which was the $7 million from last year. One of the things that came up as we're going through and reaching that figure was concern about the effect that increase in wages could have on the amount that we should ask for additional funds for funding the court interpreter fund. And it was kind of difficult because there isn't really a process in place to go and ask the Department of Finance for additional funding to compensate for any kind of COLAs or other wage increases that are negotiated during bargaining. On top of it, we have traditionally, and we always will, stay out of the bargaining process because that's local. It's done at the regional level, and that's not really our part to be involved in that. So what we ended up doing is not requesting any funds that would cover for any kind of increased wages or wages that are agreed to in the bargaining sessions that are going on. Right now they're going on in Region 2 and Region 3, and hopefully they're going to be concluded successfully sometime in the near future. But right now we don't know what those wage increases will be. So what we did was just say this is what we need to expand the services, and that's what the $4 million figure is based on. The plan is that after those if wage increases are negotiated and become agreed upon, that in the spring there will be a spring finance letter that will be sent to the Department of Finance probably in February of next year that would reflect any kind of negotiated changes so that we could seek funding for those through that path. And hopefully we'll get it, and then we won't be in this situation where raises that are negotiated end up being funded by the funds that we've calculated we need just for the basic expansion services. So that's pretty much the way that we've approached it. We think that the figure of $4 million will be adequate. If anybody has any need or want to figure out how we came up with that and the mathematical figure to do it, that's something that maybe is it Lucy on or Elizabeth? Elizabeth there.
Hi, John.
You might want to call later or send an email to Elizabeth. She's really good at explaining.
Anybody have any questions? Members can contact me. We also have, I believe, Patrick Ballard on the call from Budget Services if any of our members have any immediate questions regarding the methodology.
Justina Cuellar, I should add that the process of refining our methods so that we can be better and better at predicting how much need there actually will be to achieve full expansion, that's an ongoing process. So we're using the best analysis we can do now. It's very clear when you put the quantitative and qualitative picture that it underscores that we need additional resources, but there's an ongoing effort made that, you know, spans not only this BCP but going forward to get better and better at this. So I'm grateful that not only are we getting support from staff for the figures now, but for that longer-term process.
So, Justice Cuellar, this is David Yamasaki, if I can ask a couple questions.
Sure.
I completely understand the necessity of having additional resources given the expansion, and I think statewide the exercise has been very good, and we've been able to deliver the service that you had envisioned early on. The question that I have relates to the monies itself, not how it's going to be calculated, but rather the reality of how that money is deposited. It actually goes into a single pot, and it is used to pay for interpreters for whatever needs qualify. So my question is there a specific earmark where the monies are only going to be used for the expansion activities, or is it just going to be put into the Program 45 funding pot, if you will be drawn down presumably for this purpose and could be used for other purposes as well?
I can give you a really quick short answer. Program 4545, now known as 0150037, I believe, is, it is what it is. We can't micromanage the whole structure of it, so we have to take what we have been given from the legislature as a structure for it and do our best to say what are the extra needs just to expand services and how can we meet them. Now, there have been questions raised, like the one you're raising before, about whether that whole program should work that way, and I'm perfectly happy to have us look into that together with our partners in the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee, and so very much open to looking at that for the future. But for our purposes right now, I would say we have to take that structure as given, and we have to do our part, which is simply to identify what we need in order to have service expansion happen the way it's supposed to. Judge Austin, anything you want to add on that score?
No, I think you did a good job of explaining it. I think it would be – there's been some discussion about doing that, figuring out some way to have it set aside just for expansion money that would be either outside the fund or be earmarked in some way within the fund. And it just it's those discussions, I think, are really just getting started, and it's very complicated to think about all the ways that that could possibly be done and successfully – push through the entire system that it has to go. And it may be something that we're going to be talking about in more detail in our subcommittee as the year goes on, from perhaps next year or for other times, changing the way that those funds are actually earmarked.
And okay. Mr. John Conklin, and I'm just chiming in to take back. I agree completely. We're very aware of the budgetary implications and situations, and we're waiting for further information before further decisions are made.
Thank you.
This is Naomi Adelson. Can I comment on this?
Sure, if you want to ask a question, sure.
Yes, I would like to say that this BCP had a statement in it that said it was going to include a 20% pass-through for quote-unquote expected interpreter raises. Now, I am hearing people say that we want to expand to civil, and the way we're going to get there is if we're able to recruit and retain interpreters. So we can spend down that entire new money that we get on contractors at the federal rate if we continue to say that we are not connected in any way. The Language Access Implementation Task Force could support the Judicial Council, who pays to negotiate with the regions, which are only divided into four, and right now half the state is negotiating. So I really think we need to look, as part of the Language Access Plan, recruitment and retention of interpreters to cover expansion. It is necessary to get the interpreters way, way higher up and have wages that are not discriminatory, which is currently the case. So I would like to see that back in there.
Does anybody else have any thoughts on that?
This is David. I have some issues with folding specific language on that particular subject. I think what we should do is keep them separate. I don't know. I think we would be challenged in getting approval for this BCP if it is suggested that we would be using this to increase compensation. I mean, that's something that we will, in my view, we have to deal with on a separate track, but it could potentially be a deal killer. And really what we are trying to do is, you know, figure out how we can start, you know, providing this service in the other areas, and then we can perhaps go back. And I think I just heard Judge Austin mention that if there is an issue related to compensation, that's going to be part of a separate proposal that would be going forward at a later time. So I understand the rationale, but I think, in my view, it would be problematic to insert the language on this very specific proposed purpose, but I'll defer to others to comment as well.
This is Naomi. I think I would agree with that, but I think that I really want to say that the Judicial Council has created the Language Access Implementation Task Force. The Judicial Council hires the person who negotiates at the region-wide level with the interpreters. And so we are not all disconnected, and I would like to see a little more from the Language Access Implementation Task Force supporting the fact that things need to change for interpreters in order to create expansion and excellent language access.
This is Yvette. I just want to address one of the points that you just made. The Judicial Council does not appoint, does not employ all of the negotiators. The regions choose their negotiator. And so while it may be that in other regions they use JCC staff, that is not universally true for all the regions. And so it isn't something that the Judicial Council is coordinating or mandating or controlling.
Yes, and this is Bob Lowney. It's my understanding that we don't have, we not do any of the negotiations
in any
of the regions. We stay away and observe. We do not participate in any way in that way.
One thing I
think I just don't understand who the regional rep is the CEO for Region 2. The CEO of Mendocino is the regional rep. And I was under the understanding that her salary would come from the Judicial Council.
But that doesn't make
no,
her...
No, Kim Turner is not employed by the Judicial Council, Naomi. She is...
Okay.
Her salary is from the region, is my understanding. She's a former employee, CEO, but she has nothing... She's not hired or employed by us.
I see. Well, all I'm trying to say is, if you can imagine just being a human being interpreter, and you go to negotiate, and... The negotiations never have to do with the Judicial Council, and they don't have to do with any individual court. And so I'm just, we don't really, who is it that we negotiate with? And I think we can say that the Judicial Council does have some influence on courts, and so I think we should really support expansion by supporting interest.
Naomi, it's my understanding that the Judicial Council does not have influence or any other kind of discussions in that way. We are simply an observer and are very much at arm's length during these negotiation times. So I don't believe that is the case.
Well, and I think it's one of the issues that we're also addressing this issue in other ways through the recruitment and retention part of what we're doing as the implementation task force. And I know that those kind of concerns have been basically addressed to those the people that are working on increasing recruitment and retention. I don't know if it's really appropriate to be putting something into BCP about it. It sounds like the real reason that we're doing it this way is because we don't know what's going to get negotiated, and we're really hopeful to get it funded through the spring letter, the finance letter, instead of having it in the BCP itself. By putting them apart, it actually, I think, may make the sale to get the funds easier to do.
I agree with, this is Naomi again, I do agree with that. I mean, if we're not going to get the fundings, there's no reason to put that in there, so I'm totally fine with that. I think what I'm trying to say is that, for example, the Language Access Plan calls for an expansion of the cross-assignment system, yet at the negotiating table, they are trying to eliminate the cross-assignment system. So, I, you know, these things are connected, and I'm trying to reconnect them.
Uh-huh.
You know, Who do we tell? Hey, you're trying to get rid of the cross-assignment system. So now I'm telling the Language Access Implementation Task Force that at the negotiating table, they have been trying to decimate the cross-assignment system, not expand it, which is against the language access plan. So I would just like people to understand that.
All right. Does anybody else have any questions about the first part of the BCP?
Judge Austin, this is David. If Justice Quare would entertain a motion, I would certainly move approval of the first BCP.
We could do that, but actually it might be most helpful if we go through all of them and we can do all of them at once. And if people have questions, we can answer them as we go.
Okay.
All right, Seth, to the second one, the infrastructure support. This is our second main focus. We had submitted it last year, but we've actually figured out a way to tighten it up a little bit. We're not asking for as much funds this time. We recommend the task force vote to recommend $2.696 for fiscal year 2018-2019, an additional $2 million for 2019-2020 to reimburse the courts for their non-court interpreter expenses, and also approve an ongoing 0.5 FTE to support the grant program. This is the type of things that we are finding and hearing from the CEOs and from people at the local court level, that they just don't have the infrastructure in place to be able to support the expansion and to do it in an efficient, cost-effective way, so that they can maximize the resources, maximize the coverages in an organized way, and they need admin support to do that. So we're talking about things like things that don't come out of the interpreter fund. Things would be such as court interpreter supervision, coordination, or scheduling of staff to do that, so the funding of that, translation of key local documents for LEP court users, so local forms and those type of things that would get translated, bilingual pay differentials to hire bilingual staff, and other language access-related equipment. We've got in it a very specific amount, and that's the $696,000 for 2018-2019, that would enable courts to purchase wireless equipment for court interpreter use to use whispering systems. So to upgrade the equipment that is going to be used inside the courtroom, which will help both the work conditions, the court interpreters, and it will help the people that are using the service as well. Last year, as I said, we indicated we asked for a lot more money, didn't get any of it, $4.431 million. But we're working on the line item, breaking it out in a way that really does, I think, is going to be much more persuasive for us to be able to get the funds that we're talking about. So instead of the two-year ask that we had before, which came to about $8 million total, we're down a little over $4 million over the 2 years. That's about it. That's about it for the second one. Does anybody have any questions about that?
This is David. I don't have any questions, but I would tell you that this is a welcome inclusion in the BCP. The equipment that we're talking about is demanded essentially by the interpreters because of the ability to communicate quietly, and the equipment itself is extremely expensive, and it's part of the fact that it has to be high quality, high frequency, to avoid any interference from adjoining courtrooms that may be using the equipment. So it is maybe costly, but unfortunately, it's one of the very, very important pieces of equipment that interpreters use in some of the high-volume departments.
Anybody else have any questions about it? Okay. The third item is the signage grant program. That we talked about at our last in-person meeting in some detail, that this was something that we had asked for before, that we really felt it's something that we could sell right now, and there's a real need for it. It would allow for courts to be able to have expand their language access signage and wayfinding equipment in their court facilities, so that people with language access needs can find their way around, know where they're supposed to be, and don't get lost in the process. The reason this is a good one right now is because of the National Center for State Courts report that we presented at our last meeting, and that shows the documented need and how great it can be and what the best practices could be and how much assistance that that good signage can be provide. And at the same time, we also have an innovation grant that's going on, and my court was the lucky enough to get it, I think partly because we had already made some improvements and saw, as we were one of the host courts for the National Center State Courts, that in doing their survey. And so we're already on our way to provide some of the signage that we would be able to point to that would be the subject of that grant. And I think it's persuasive, and I think it's something that the Department of Finance would once they understand the what we're going to be doing, what the need is, that this could be something that really could end up being funded. So I'm excited about that one. I'm hopeful that it will meet muster, and somebody will actually see that this is something that needs to be done over at Department of Finance. Anybody have any questions about that? Okay. Then on the last one, which was for the development and maintenance of the Language Access Toolkit, we had originally thought that we were going to ask for $49,000 for that, and so it was a way to keep it updated. It's such an important part of what we're doing, and it's such an important tool for people in the local courts. We're getting lots of hits on the site already, and we know there's going to be expansion as things continue to expand. And additionally, we've added a little extra in there to get it to the $85,000 that will be production of multilingual outreach videos, which I think is something that's really needed to educate people that the courts are now providing the services that we are so that they're able to come and use them. Because I think that some of the information about what we're actually doing out there is not getting to the communities in need, the ones that would be able to utilize the new services that we're providing. So I think that's a great idea. The translation subcommittee has also worked on further development, expansion, and maintenance of the Language Access Toolkit. We're looking for maybe one FTE staff position to support the toolkit as well as the funds for the outreach videos. So hopefully that one will work out too, because it's something that's needed. It's one of those things that everybody thinks is great when you put something up online, toolkit or other type of things like that, and then you need somebody there to make sure that there's maintenance of it and additional material is going to be put up there and it's kept up to date. We have so little staff to be able to do that. They're so overwhelmed already with all the things that we're doing. I don't see how any of our current staff are going to be able to keep it up to date. Anybody have any question with any of that? Okay, I'll turn it over to Justice Cuellar then.
Thank you very much, Judge Austin. I just want to make a brief observation about where we are with this BCP and then see if there are any further discussions, comments, or motions. The challenge for us in the task force is to do two things at once. First, to bear in mind the entire picture of what's happening on language access and how real people are both affected and really crucial to make the system work. The system really is not a system, it's people at the end of the day. By the same token, we also face the challenge of how to prioritize and stay within our lane. And I think on that score, I'm very pleased that we are, I think, with this BCP, striking the right balance. If there were no practical or financial constraints, we might be asking for twice as much money. We could certainly put it to good use in a whole bunch of ways. But both the amount that we are zeroing in on, as well as how we're sequencing this, what we're doing, how we're choosing the language, to be perfectly honest, reflecting all the input that we've gotten has been one priority for us, but the other is to do this in a way that will help us put our best foot forward and really explain to people how we are prioritizing and why we are trying to do this. So, on the expansion of access to interpreters in civil proceedings, for example, we're really trying our best to give people a sense of where the gap is between what we've promised to do, what we are able to do right now, and how much as we want that gap to be addressed as much as possible in all kinds of ways, there are some aspects of that really depend on having the right resources, the right people, and so on. So with that, let me ask if there are any last questions or comments, and then we might go to a motion and a vote.
Angie.
Okay, I think I heard somebody.
I just, hi, Justice. This is Angie Birchfield.
Hi, Angie.
Hi. I just wanted to inquire before closing. Mm-hmm. Along the lines of what Ms. Pena was saying with regard to the interpreter pay, I understand that it's sort of like playing a ping pong, who's the one that's really responsible for our funding, but couldn't the Language Access Implementation Task Force make a recommendation to the Judicial Council or whoever the powers may be with regard to taking into consideration the interpreters and what they're receiving as far as their salary and their pay and independent contractors, et cetera? I think that would, you know, perhaps go a long way if that could also be maybe mentioned to them.
Thank you for your comment. I think, you know, here's why it gets tricky. In a very general sense, I would say it is not lost on me and it's not lost on anybody who works on this issue that, you know, just to underscore something I said a moment ago, the entire system depends on people. And we see that. You can't read the language access plan without seeing that. I would say the challenge for us is to be most effective where the structure is giving us an opportunity to play a direct role. And, you know, I look at the legislative structure, and it's one that really is about having these negotiations take place at the regional level. That's the way the legislature designed it. If, you know, at the end of the day, our role, as I see it, is to provide technical advice and analyze where service expansion can happen, what it is we need to do to make things like this language access toolkit work. But I'm, you know, certainly, I think that is completely consistent with recognizing that at the end of the day, all these parts have to work together, and we have to see if they don't, what recommendations we might make in the medium to long term to see that they work better. But that is sort of the level at which the task force operates. We don't so much get involved in how a particular court should run something or how a particular region should do X or Y thing. It's more about how is the entire system functioning, how do the pieces fit together. But, you know, I take your point. I understand that framing it that way might be frustrating in some respects, but I found that this is the best way for the task force to play a useful and constructive role. At the end of the day, I feel like everybody has an interest in service extension, and that's where we can put our priorities. And then, you know, as these processes work themselves out, as Judge Austin said, we can help. We can see, you know, what there needs to be done that can benefit from the task force's help and support, and we want to be there to provide that support.
Okay, I appreciate that.
Thank you. Judge Austin, would you like to make a motion about the budget?
Sure. I'll move that we support and recommend the BCPs as proposed.
Thank you. Do I have a second?
Second. This is Elon.
Thank you both. Much appreciated. So all those in favor of approving the BCP concepts for further consideration of the Judicial Council, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay. With that, I'm very pleased to see that the task force has approved the concepts, and I am very grateful to all of you on the task force, to Judge Austin and his subcommittee, to our staff. More work remains to be done, just very briefly. Today's approval is going to let us go to the Judicial Branch Budget Committee. Their meeting is May 16th, and we're going to say we have task force support for this. We want this to go forward. I'm sure they're going to have questions for us. We'll try our best to answer them. And then later this month, the BCP items are going to be submitted to all the relevant advisory committees for approval, and we are going to finalize and submit the report narrative to Budget Services on June 1st. So that Judicial Branch Budget Committee is then going to meet on June 16th to look at everything, and at that point we will not only cross our fingers, but we will have done our best to make sure they understand why we think this is important, even in the great mix of things that are happening in the branch. So that's where we are. We will keep you posted. We will need your help going forward. And the final BCP, of course, will be due to the Department of Finance on September 5th. So we'll keep you posted. In the meantime, thank you for your work here. There's more work ahead on other things. We will be in touch in the days to come. And with that, I want to thank you because that's it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Be well.
The host has left the meeting. So at this time, the meeting will come to an end. Thank you, and goodbye.